Phoenix to Abu Dhabi with a triple, then Tianjin to rural Maine with a 320, followed by a 787 Dreamliner from Madrid to Sao Paulo, all in a week's work for a ferry pilot. Even when things go exactly to plan, these back-to-back trips are physically and mentally challenging, but in reality, things rarely go as planned.
Here's the latest. It's Wednesday now, August 2nd, and we're in Tianjin. We got here yesterday afternoon on the high-speed train from Beijing.
We're going to, what's that place called? Binhai?
Binhai.
I thought it was Tianjin, but that's got to be the first one.
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe that's the end place and it stops at
Tianjin. Oh, shit. This is not going to be in English. Hold on.
Wouldn't say it was a particularly easy process. Nothing in China is. At least that's been my experience after coming here pretty regularly for the past 15 years. But after about half an hour, we figured out how to convert our email reservations to actual tickets. I was also happy to see that we were in business class.
There's one that says pickup number on the original receipt, Bob.
That's 2F, 1F.
5A, 5C.
Fuck. How did he get that one?
I don't know. That looks like third class as opposed to this.
Being the snooty passenger that I can be, I of course made a beeline to the fancy seats, but then quickly realized that our seats were not the nicer ones. Eh, whatever. It wasn't a long ride, and it was actually pretty comfortable and very clean. Moving at over 200 miles per hour over the ground was also pretty awesome. As Americans, we don't have fast modern trains at home, and to be honest, I've always been pretty skeptical of the concept. I've got to say, it would be pretty slick to have these back home, especially in the Northeast.
You know, this week has been insane. It's been very, very busy. Obviously, we flew that 777 from Phoenix, from Marana to Phoenix and then to Abu Dhabi, and then we immediately came to Beijing to pick up this Airbus A320.
Remember, we were originally in a mad rush to get to Tianjin to take over for the local Chinese crew we hired to fly the first leg out of Yichang. A permit issue delayed that plan by 24 hours, giving us more time to rest and recuperate in Tianjin before heading out across the Pacific. We'd get another overnight in Hawaii midway through the 23 hours of flying with the new plan, and we'd still get to Brunswick, Maine with enough time for Bob to get over to Madrid to heavy crew that Dreamliner. As I've mentioned, in the last few years, paying for things in China has gone almost completely paperless and cardless.
Scan.
Thank you.
You do it?
Yeah. Thank you. 20.
Everyone pays for things with WeChat, which is basically WhatsApp / social media / pretty much everything you can think of rolled up in a phone app.
It won't let me verify. I did this already. It's taking 3 days to verify. Yeah, you might want to tell this guy.
We're having trouble
still
with
verifying
with the WeChat,
ID, so I can't use WeChat to pay.
Sorry.
What do you make it? He told us to go away.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, too bad.
Hi. Our WeChat is not working, and we have to pay the taxi driver. We're staying here.
Okay.
Can you guys pay the taxi, and then we put it on the room?
Whatever you just said.
The voice translator apps are so incredibly useful. I use them all the time. While the idea of using an app to pay for things sounds convenient, the reality is, in order to use it, you have to connect bank accounts or credit cards and also upload a bunch of personal information, including a passport. I resisted doing this for obvious reasons for a long time, but ultimately caved and attempted it. Days after uploading my docs, it still wasn't working, and the help text wasn't helpful. Side note, it is possible to use cash in some situations, and I always carry a wad of RMB around if I remember to grab some at the airport. I didn't this time, and we ended up handing off a $20 bill for the $3 fare, a token of our appreciation.
We've reached Tianjin, and we're just checked into the St. Regis here. We're waiting on permits for tomorrow, hoping that that comes today. Could come tomorrow. They're awaiting permits for exporting the aircraft, and that's going to be kind of our biggest holdup. We have a Chinese crew flying the aircraft out of Yichang, and they should be moving the airplane here tomorrow. I got to check the time, but it'll get that far at least, and our hope is that we can get that permit in time to get the aircraft exported and then move. We'll see what happens.
With time to kill, Bob and I headed downstairs to grab lunch and have a look around.
He's like way off. Doesn't know to get in the center of the board.
The St. Regis Hotel is situated downtown on the banks of the Haihe River, and like most urban waterways in China, and well, anywhere else for that matter, it's gross. So you can imagine our surprise when we walked outside to see a bunch of scantily clad paddleboarders willingly submerging themselves in it.
Four times since I've been watching.
He's definitely going to catch some sort of communicable disease from that water.
You're wearing a hat now.
I'm wearing a hat. My hair's all jacked up.
Oh my god.
Dude, I woke up like last night at some point in this massive sweat. Just like this night sweat. The bed was soaked. My body was soaked.
Are you sure it was sweat?
It was sweat, man.
For the gazillionth time, we once again found ourselves in China, delayed, waiting on lawyers, permit scalpers, and various low-level bureaucrats to dot I's and cross T's with no definitive end in sight.
It's a much nicer day out today.
Yeah, nobody's swimming in the river yet.
The bigger problem, however, was that the 787 in Madrid was looming, and Bob had to get there in less than 50 hours. This meant that come 11 a.m., every hour that the delay dragged out was an hour less rest we'd be able to take en route and still ensure Bob's ability to make his flight to Madrid out of Boston. A 24-hour workday definitely isn't the norm for us. Maybe when we were young, but now it's a rarity. But we were definitely able and willing if we needed to.
Ni hao, motherfucker! Me fucking hell.
We're out of here.
God, I hope we're out of here.
Well, we're out of here. We're out of the hotel anyway.
Yeah.
For the first time in days, things went according to plan. We slept all day and made our way to the airport to make our midnight slot.
All I do know is from this point onward, I probably won't have a shower until I get home.
Jesus, great.
Go.
Yeah.
Yep. There's our first leg.
Well, here we are.
Welcome to the fuck doctor.
Yes. Okay. No idea.
Well,
we're on board the fuck doctor. We just got here.
I'd like to say we're getting out of China, but I don't want to say it too soon.
Well,
jinx us.
I mean, things are looking pretty good.
There's a full moon out there tonight, so, you know, all bets are off. Who knows?
Really not bad. I mean, it's pretty old. It's got the old CRT displays in the cockpit. So, I don't know. It's probably 20 years old, this airplane.
Database blues.
Yep.
Runs out before we get to Guam.
All this data.
Well, at least the first 20 of them.
That page.
As expected, the nav database was only good until leaving Chinese airspace, so for 90% of the flight, we'd have to build our own user waypoints in the MCDU. The Airbus, of course, can only store 20 user fixes at a time, so we'd be busy with the box the whole journey, something else to help us stay awake. We both breathed a huge sigh of relief when we lifted off the runway in Tianjin. The journey ahead would be exhausting, an 11,000-mile voyage across the Pacific via Guam and Oahu, Phoenix, then on to Brunswick, Maine, our destination. With the delay, we slept for nearly 2 full days, and it's a good thing. There was no rest in our future until we'd get to the northeast coast of the USA. Guam is one of those places that we pass through pretty regularly, especially since the Russia sanctions, as our inability to overfly Russian airspace now means not being able to make anchorage in most of the narrow bodies, and a much longer mid-pack route just about every time. Despite seeing Guam so often, I always marvel at how beautiful it looks arriving in the morning sun. For overnight rest, Guam is one of my favorite stops. Close hotels, friendly people. There wouldn't be an overnight for us this time, though. Guam was just a fuel stop, both for our airplane and our bodies. Coffee was the priority, and the good folks at Guam Flight Services always take care of us by bringing our post-China favorite. A huge bag of Egg McMuffins, hash browns, 4 large coffees, and a couple of rice and Portuguese sausage and egg bowls. A McDonald's menu item I've only ever seen at Mickey D's on the island. There's no in-flight Wi-Fi on ferry flights, so pretty much every time we land somewhere, our phones blow up.
What are you doing, Bob? Trying to unfuck this Duffy thing. The whole swap in Abu Dhabi is probably not going to happen.
Really?
With Holiday.
Why?
Yeah, because they missed their connection getting to Serbia, so now they're stuck in Frankfurt for the night, and they're not going to go... I think they can get in there tomorrow morning.
Leave a piece of rice on your face.
All right, I'll let you deal with that. I'm going to do a quick walk.
One of us deals with getting the airplane turned while the other checks in with the company matters. This week was becoming a dumpster fire, and I was mighty pleased to be the one on airplane duty. I got the walk around done, organized the catering, and programmed the MCDU. Lucky for me, the route across the Pacific has very few waypoints, so in contrast to the 40-minute task of building user fixes that Bob got stuck doing in China, for me it took only about 5 minutes, and before long we were back on the move. The flight was 7 hours and 20 minutes long, and the sun had just rose an hour prior. But the eastbound leg to Hawaii would mean touching down at sunset, with the sun rising again just before we land in Phoenix. This definitely messes with your mind. Fortunately, though, Pacific crossings are easy and downright boring. Monitoring weather and making position reports every hour or so is pretty much the only thing to do. The only real weather along the route for this leg was a small area of cumulonimbus buildups about 100 miles east of Guam, and we easily maneuvered around those visually while still talking to Guam departure control and radar contact. Avoiding storms over the middle of the ocean when out of radar contact is a bit trickier. That involves requesting a route offset, basically a parallel track from roughly 10 to 100 miles, left or right, of course, with San Francisco Oceanic. Once they give permission, we're free to deviate as much as we want within the corridor of airspace that they approve.
All right, well, it's meal time here. This was catering from Guam. It doesn't look too bad. A piece of bread. Some like onions and it's supposed to be roast beef. It doesn't look like roast beef to me, man.
No, I'm not sure what that is. If it was from China, I'm not so sure I'd eat it. Considering what it looks like. But,
no, I agree. It's not from China. It's from Guam. But
Philly cheesesteak.
Yeah, it's got like onions and like some sort of weird white cheese in it.
Well, at least they heated it up.
Good.
Hopefully.
Pretty good.
Is it?
No.
Did we order food in Hawaii?
Yeah. I got like pad thai and...
Oh, that's right. You actually ordered some stuff.
There's like a dozen ovens on here. There's ovens in the back.
Yeah, that figures. I ordered stuff that I didn't need to heat up. So now we have ovens. You can thank me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what I got. Maybe I told them just get a pizza.
No, you didn't.
I prefer just to get a damn pizza.
Yeah, me too. Better than this.
It's just easy. I know what I'm getting. It's going to be edible.
After lunch and with 5 hours remaining to Hawaii, we both popped in some earbuds and did our own thing to stay alert and entertained. I caught up on some podcasts and audiobooks and fiddled around with the cameras. The aircraft was equipped with cell call, so if San Francisco Oceanic needed something, they could just ping us over HF and a cockpit alert would cue us to answer the radio.
Shit is boring, man.
In this business, boring is good, but unfortunately this time it wouldn't last. After 4 hours en route, our right air conditioning pack failed and we had to shut it down. Not an emergency situation by any stretch, but it meant we were down to a single bleed source to keep the airplane pressurized. If our remaining pack failed too, we'd have no choice but to descend down to a lower altitude, which would in turn drastically increase our fuel burn. Since we'd be landing with 2,500 kilos of fuel, we wouldn't have enough extra to make our destination and we'd need to be ready to divert. Along this route, our diversion alternates were Wake Island and Midway Island. We started making some calculations just in case. At the time of the failure, we'd have to divert to Midway Island if we lost the other pack, but we were right on the cusp of that, so as long as the good pack stayed alive for another 20 minutes, we'd be able to make our destination. With that solid plan, we crossed our fingers and mentally prepared for diversion if needed. In the end, it wasn't. Defects are common, but aircraft systems are redundant for a reason. The left pack continued to run, and once we landed, we were able to get the bad one back online and didn't even need to take a delay. Just as expected, the sun set at the top of descent and it was completely dark by the time we touched down. The John Rogers Airport in Kalaeloa is pretty hard to pick out at night, but we've been going there for so long, we've got the visual approach down pat. Few years, it's become nearly impossible to get parking approval on short notice for HNL, Oahu's main commercial airport. The handling companies cite both lack of parking space and personnel for the reason. The John Rogers Airport in Kalaeloa is only a few miles to the west, over by the Disney Aulani and Ko'olina resorts, and has been a pretty good alternative for us, always willing to work our flights 24/7.
I wish it was the last leg.
God.
It's
I don't even want to think about it. This is getting brutal.
It's the last leg over the Pacific.
We got the airplane turned extremely fast and we were back underway in under an hour. At 14 hours in, Bob and I were both beginning to feel it. Fortunately for us, the sun would be back up soon and deliver the burst of energy we needed to finish up the mission.
There, Bob.
Some kind of meat sandwich.
The catering in Honolulu is good. I'm making my breakfast burrito.
Well, it better be good. It's probably $50.
Oh, nice. Flour is probably the reason.
Yeah. I don't know if you're supposed to eat this.
The stretch of ocean between Hawaii and the west coast of the United States is the longest overwater air route without any alternate landing sites in the world. There are, of course, longer stretches, case in point, our last leg between Guam and Hawaii, but there are islands along that route, and the same goes for airways crossing the South Pacific, the Atlantic, and Indian Ocean. Despite that fact, it's also one of the busiest stretches across the water, and much like the North Atlantic, there's an organized system of airways between the Hawaiian Islands and the west coast called tracks. The flight time in a jet between land on the Hawaii tracks takes between 4 and 6 hours depending on winds and destination. And on this trip, we were slightly over 19 hours since departure from China by the time we were coasting in over Los Angeles, and the sun was starting to peak over the horizon, which was the second sunrise for us since leaving China. Approach into Phoenix, I remember that we'd started here just 5 days earlier in the 777, which in that moment felt like an eternity ago. We'd come full circle, literally, and the crazy part was that we weren't even finished yet. We still had to fly across the country to Brunswick, Maine. At this point, you know the drill, right? Set up the fuel panel with our requested fuel load, fueler hooks in. Add a few quarts of oil to each engine, kick the tires. This plane is going to part out. Built in 2000, the airplane flew for China Eastern its entire life, 23 years. And this leg that we're about to fly will be the last flight the airplane ever makes. Phoenix to Brunswick, Maine. Then it'll be stripped for parts.
We're almost there. I'm eating my pad thai from Hawaii. In a plastic plate, probably bleached. Some sort of toxic chemicals into the noodles, which I'm now ingesting. So hopefully that'll give me some energy to finish up the rest of this flight.
For Bob, it was the normal sugar load, frosted donuts and Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew, give me the energy for the rest of this flight.
We'll see if Mountain Dew works better than melted plastic.
Yeah, exactly.
In the course of under a week, Bob and I would travel over 21,000 nautical miles circling the Earth and then some. Of that, 17,000 miles was under our own power, with a total of roughly 36 hours of flight time split between the 777 and the Airbus A320. Suffice to say, on the last leg, it's hard to describe exactly how worn out we both were. I know what you're thinking. A 24-hour stint without taking rest is not best practice in any way. I totally agree. As a private operator flying under far less restrictive regulations, however, it's entirely permissible.
I think I see it out there.
Yeah,
it's
probably.
Yeah.
Hangar and shit down there.
Yeah, that's definitely it.
Yeah.
Brunswick, Maine was a new airport for both of us. The facility that would dismantle the airplane was a brand new location, and this A320 would not only be the first of three aircraft we'd deliver to them, but the first aircraft ever delivered to Brunswick for teardown and part out. It's a small airport with no control tower and only a common traffic advisory frequency to communicate with other, mainly small, airplanes in the vicinity.
Airport Lindermatic, got a 230, we'll leave the airport in sight, going to cancel at present.
And just like that, it was over. For me, anyway. Part of the unique nature of being a ferry pilot is that we're often there for different milestone events. Delivery of an airline's first airplane, or maybe the first of a new type. Sometimes it's the retirement of the last airplane, capping the end of decades of service somewhere with an aging type. At 47 years of age and nowhere near retirement, it's weird that I've had plenty of water cannon salutes in my career already. It's one of the fun parts of this job, but the final leg with some worn-out A320 is rarely met with any fanfare like that. In fact, part-out facilities are usually just a remote patch of abandoned tarmac, or massive expanses of hard-packed desert sand surrounded by the shredded carcasses of our poor airplane's kin. Frankly, more often than not, we're sitting on an airplane shut down with nobody around, except maybe a roughneck in a pickup truck with a ladder in the back. Now, I wish I could bear better news to my sentimental friends that ache seeing the end-of-life stages of an airplane, but I can't. It's an unceremonious end in most cases. But as we taxied in, we did notice about a dozen happy-looking people waiting for us to arrive. It turns out this was actually the first part-out project for a new facility of a growing business.
Have someone do like a pan shot of all of us with this? Yeah. Okay.
They even had t-shirts made commemorating the event. It was a nice way to be received after such a grueling mission, but what I really looked forward to was getting home to my family and most immediately a bed. Bob and I hired a car service down to Boston, where I immediately hopped on the first RJ to Philly, and Bob grabbed a hotel at Logan before heading to Madrid the next day to continue all the way to Sao Paulo as the third wheel on a 787. While part of me was a little bummed to miss an opportunity to fly a Dreamliner, as it turns out, I'm just not as hardcore as Captain Bob. By the time Bob got home 4 days later, the entire ordeal was a distant memory for me, and I was already trying to figure out what trip was next on the horizon. As it happened, the remainder of the year would bring a bunch of wide-body trips, including a few 787s and several A330s.
Well, you ready to do this again for the second time in 2 days?
There's no yoke, for those not familiar, between an Airbus and Boeing. And this one, we're actually flying not a long distance, maybe a 30 or 40 minute flight, but we're doing it with the gear down.
There's the inoperative sticker on the landing gear handle, and that is not a normal thing.
So when I say positive rate, don't put the gear up.
All right, I'll try to avoid it.
In addition to a host of new adventures around the world, the next few months would also bring some exciting news with regard to Cockpit Casual. Over the last few years, I've been using action cams like GoPros and DJI Osmos to capture footage and tell the stories, but I've recently upgraded my equipment drastically. This year, Bob and I have embarked on a new challenge, attempting to take this thing to the next level. We've teamed up with some professionals and will be working to produce something light years beyond what we upload to YouTube. So keep your eyes on this space as we hope to announce something big in 2025.
But at the same time, you got to make it more entertaining on many different levels.
Right.
Like, there's going to be the aviation enthusiasts that are going to love, like, sitting here watching us in a cockpit do this stuff.
Right.
But that's not, I mean, you know, but how many people out there want to see that? It's a certain amount.
Yeah.
But we want to reach more people than that, right?
Right.
In the meantime, the new Sony CinemaLine cameras and Pro Audio will just enhance the quality of Cockpit Casual as I get better with operating the latest high-end equipment. I have no plans to stop producing YouTube content in the immediate future, so definitely subscribe if you haven't already, because Cockpit Casual isn't going anywhere. In fact, it's getting better.